Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, good friends. Welcome back to the Bill Press Pod and today's very special guest. You know, of all cabinet secretaries in most administrations, the Secretary of Energy is one of those we hear the least about. You don't remember much about Rick Perry, do you? But not in this administration. Jennifer Granholm, President Biden's Energy Secretary, is one of the most prominent cabinet secretaries, and for two good reasons. One, because two pieces of legislation, the Infrastructure Act and the Inflation Reduction Act, both impact so much of the energy industry, everything from the electric grid to electric cars to charging stations and gas stoves. And two, because Jennifer Granholm, former governor of Michigan, is just so damn good at her job. She's smart, articulate, and determined to make good things happen on her watch. A few days ago, I had the honor of welcoming Secretary Granholm to a Talk of the Hill event at Washington's Hill Center. And I knew you'd enjoy listening in on our conversation, starting with my introduction of the Secretary to the crowd at the Hill Center.
Madam Secretary, when it comes to introductions, I'm always reminded of a little story about First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, you know, who was such an incredibly accomplished woman. When she would go out to speak in the introductions, it seemed took so long, and she finally put out the word to her staff, just tell people to just cool it, right? You know, keep it really brief. So the next time she went out at some public event, the master of ceremonies said, so our next speaker is Eleanor Roosevelt. The less said about her, the better.
I love that.
So if we keep this brief, you understand.
Yes, please.
But the Secretary comes to us from a very exciting background, our BA from UC Berkeley, a law degree from Harvard. Then she went on to become the Attorney General of the state of Michigan, and of course, Governor of the state of Michigan for two terms. And now our Secretary of Energy, President Biden's cabinet, one of the most important of all the agencies, and particularly important today with all the new responsibilities that come to the Department of Energy under the Infrastructure Act and the Inflation Reduction Act, particularly with its emphasis on climate change and clean energy. So certainly a very important post, and one that she occupies with the full confidence and trust of the President of the United States. On a personal note, I must tell you that I first met the Secretary, interviewed her when she was governor of Michigan. And then for a couple of years, she and I were the stars of Al Gore's Current TV. We both had a show. I was the morning show, and the Secretary had an evening show, and we had a lot of fun visiting back and forth on our stuff. So it is wonderful to see you.
So welcome great to see you too, Bill.
Welcome to the Hill Center.
Thank you for
joining us. Now, we have a little tradition here that we put when people sign up, we ask them, what's the most important question that you think we should ask the Secretary, our guest? And so this evening, we've done that survey, and I want you to know what was on everybody's mind, number one. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you going to take away our gas stove?
Oh, my gosh. I hope you're kidding about that being the number one. But the answer is nobody is going to take away anybody's gas stove. It's, honestly, that's like such a blown-up, ridiculous thing. But we did put out some, the Department of Energy does a lot with appliance
regulation, making sure they're more efficient, right? And so we did put out guidance for both electric stoves as well as gas stoves, like we do for all the other appliances. And, you know, nobody's taken away anybody's gas stove if you like it. But we do love the induction stoves, yes. Can I just say that?
But I was going to say, maybe the more serious question, is there a good reason why we should be moving from gas stoves to induction top?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, honestly, first of all, gas stoves, it's been found that 12.6% of the kids who are in homes that have gas stove have a higher percentage of asthma because, of course, they emit, you know, particulates, noxious fumes, et cetera. So that is a concern. But number two, for those who care about efficiency, induction stoves, for example, are much more efficient than other stoves all around, and they're safer. I mean, for people with children, for example, you know, you can put your hand on an induction stove and it's not going to burn because the pot heats in interaction with the coils underneath the stove. So it's not it heats twice as fast, by the way, but it's a much safer product as well. And the Inflation Reduction Act is going to give people a lot of incentives to be able to, when they decide, if they decide they want to convert to induction stoves, you can get today a 30% tax credit for purchasing an induction stove, and there will be rebates. Those are income dependent. Those will be coming out later this year as well. So there's a lot to love about it.
So let's go back up to the role of the department, because it is a department that some people, I think, don't understand the breadth and expanse of the things that come under the jurisdiction of the Secretary of Energy. Can you give us the quick 30,000 foot?
Yeah, I mean, people may not realize. I mean, first of all, because we got all of this new ability to deploy clean energy in the bills that were passed last year, the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, people think it's all about just making sure that we get clean energy out. And it certainly is that. But it's also about the future of energy. So we have 17 national laboratories. There's about 100,000 DOEers across the country in laboratories, huge laboratories. In fact, one of the laboratories, the Lawrence Livermore National Lab just made news in December because it successfully created ignition to be able to have fusion as opposed to fission for nuclear power. It is a very exciting breakthrough. But so we have 17 of these massive facilities across the country doing next generation technology. So that's one piece. The today deployment is another piece. And we also have the mission of making sure that our national nuclear stockpile is safe, secure, and effective. So there is a defense component as well as a non-proliferation of nuclear weapons component. So there's a whole suite of things. In addition to, there are a number of sites that were used during the Manhattan Project and that where there is radiation, you know, radioactive materials, and there's a huge amount of cleanup that is done on that site. So that mission is also a piece of what the Department of Energy is. But now we just created a whole new undersecretary for infrastructure, which is all about deploying these technologies and making sure that we meet the president's goal, which is to get 100% clean electricity on the electric grid by 2035, 100%. And we've got a ways to go. We've got to add, I mean, you know, just in our speak, we have to add about 2,000 gigawatts of clean electricity to the electric grid to get to that goal, which is a huge amount of capacity. And so that means solar and wind, yes, but it means hydroelectric power. It means making sure we're not removing any non-carbon emitting power like nuclear. It means making sure that we're tapping the heat beneath our feet with this geothermal, that we are looking at offshore wind, onshore wind, that we're looking at tidal power, wave power. There's just so much out there that we are looking at and looking to deploy. That includes electrifying our transportation system. That means batteries for electric vehicles and electric vehicles themselves. And that means when you have an electric grid that is charging up all these batteries, you've got to make sure you've got enough capacity, or that your electric grid can be what is known as bi-directional, so that all of the batteries in the... How many of you have an electric vehicle? Does anybody have an electric vehicle here? A few people on the back. So we want your batteries on electric vehicles to be able to, yes, power your car, but if things got really dicey or power went down somewhere, ideally you'd want to have all of those batteries be able to contribute to resiliency on the grid. So be able to take power and give power so that you have an electric grid that is really a virtual power plant is what they call them. So there's all sorts of stuff happening in this space that is very, very exciting.
And the Inflation Reduction Act is just put
it's
even
totally,
more.
In the reason why it's so important, Bill, as you know, I mean, first of all, there is this 30% tax credit for clean energy deployment. So those who are developers of wind farms and you know, solar farms, et cetera, there's a huge incentive now, a tax credit to be able to do that. That's number one. There's also a tax credit for individuals to be able to put that solar on your home. And so there's more solar that goes on. There's also the tax credit extends really, it's sort of technology agnostic, except for it is for clean technologies. So all kinds of technology. But that means that what it means really is that those tax credits, and that includes the tax credits to be able to buy electric vehicles, by the way. You can get a $7,500 tax credit if you buy a new electric vehicle that was made in the United States. And you may be thinking, oh, who can afford a Tesla? But actually, electric vehicles that are being put out now by the auto manufacturers, there are many models that are below $30,000 a year. I drive a Chevy Bolt. That's one of them. And when you take $7,500 off the top at the dealer, you can, it's easier to finance that amount, and it's going to be true for leased vehicles as well. The leases will be passed through, and you get that tax credit. If you want to buy a used electric vehicle, you get a $4,000 tax credit, according to the Inflation Reduction Act. So my point in saying that is that, and there's also tax credits associated with the manufacture of the batteries for electric vehicles and the vehicles themselves. And so America, with the Inflation Reduction Act, has become irresistible. In terms of jobs, in terms of manufacturing, in terms of being able to deploy these clean energy technologies, we, you know, I'm sorry to go on because I know you have,
but this
is so exciting to me because as the former governor of Michigan, I was the governor during the time when the auto industry went bankrupt, right? And the Obama administration, Vice President Biden came in and gave us help for the auto industry to rescue, which was all paid back. But the bottom line is, we saw so much manufacturing go overseas. And as a nation, we did nothing about it. We just sat there with our arms folded and said, well, globalization, let it go, you know, free trade, et cetera. Now, you know, we used to say that for a state to try to get a manufacturing facility and compete with China, with others who were really in the game, it was like bringing a knife to a gunfight. Because they had industrial strategy, those other countries, like China, understandably, they wanted to get that for their people. And so now we have an industrial strategy that is going to bring back and onshore all of these. And just proof point that this is working is that since the Inflation Reduction Act and the bipartisan infrastructure law were passed, if you just get this one slice, which is the batteries to the electric vehicle, that whole supply chain was overseas. Since those laws have been passed, 81, and the 81st one was announced today, Ford just announced a big battery factory in Michigan. 81 battery factories, whether pieces of the supply chain, the whole supply chain, have announced that they are moving or opening up in the United States. 81 factories! This never would have happened before. But because we are irresistible, we are bringing it back.
And I want you to know the Press family, we're doing our share. Our son in Bend, Oregon, just told Carol and me yesterday, he just bought a Chevy Volt. $22,000.
Yes. See?
I mean,
see what I'm saying?
With all the technology. and the $7,500 tax credit. Plus, he gets something for hooking up a charger
in
their home.
Right, you get tax credit off of that. That's another 30% of a tax credit.
Irresistible.
See?
So is the American auto industry, they're bought into this?
They're totally bought into it.
Because they were dragging their heels, let's face it, for a long time.
No, they were. And, you know, Tesla really did do an unbelievable thing, which is to say we can make electric vehicles and we can do it in the United States. So that was amazing. But they were high-end. I mean, people were paying a lot of money for that. And so it was really sort of stoking the domestic auto industry, other than Tesla, like Ford, GM, you know, Stellantis now, to be able to do this. So last summer, all of the domestic automakers stood in the Rose Garden with the president saying that they are committed that half of their fleet by 2030, half of the new cars sold in America, will be electric. And of course, what that does for the climate, what that does for the planet is just fantastic. If you look at any of the studies about the uptake in electric vehicles, it is like the hockey stick. First of all, if you drive one, you're not going back. It just is. It's quiet, and if you drive one car, you save $70 a month in a fill-up, because the amount of money that it takes to charge a car is about $11 to fill up an average vehicle. And the amount of money it takes to fill up an average vehicle, depending on the price of gas, could be, $35, $40, $50. Last summer, it was close to that. So, it's so much more economical to be able to do that. So,
you mentioned so many elements of this that I'd like to come back and touch on. You mentioned the electric grid. I think most of us have the impression that the grid is kind of old and creaky and fall apart, and maybe we shouldn't be depending on it.
The grid is old. I mean, as you can imagine, it was built, some of it was built in the 50s. It's on wooden poles. You see all of this, these extreme weather events make the grid that much more fragile, right? So part of the efforts through the Inflation Reduction Act, the bipartisan infrastructure law, gives us $20 billion to invest in resiliency on our grid, as well as expanding the capacity of our grid. But one of the things, it means that we have to add new transmission lines, and we have to add new transmission lines that are not on that are really sturdy. In places, we have to bury the wires, especially if it's in a high, fire area or in a high wind area, to make it more safe. In some cases, what we need to do is to what is known as advanced reconductoring, just add on the existing, if the grid is sturdy, if the transmission, the transformers are sturdy, you can reconductor the wires. And that means you can get, in many cases, twice as much energy through the efficient materials that are next generation reconductoring materials on the wires. So we've got to do all of that. But we basically have to double the size of our grid, Bill, able to take on and replace the current dirty power to make it all clean. And that is a lot of, that's a lot of effort. It's a lot. And we want to have all these, we want to try a lot of microgrids so that you don't have everything be centralized power. So solar panels, et cetera, on homes, community solar, so that there are smaller pockets of power being delivered to a community so that it's separate from the main grid. So there's all sorts of things, including the virtual power plants that I was talking about.
And for anybody here who lives in the Washington area, most of you do, you don't have to be in California to think about solar power.
Totally.
Carol and I live a block away, and we have now for, 10 years, had solar panels on our house here on Capitol Hill. And we actually make money. We get a check because we generate more power than the two of us can use. So it's really worth looking into if you have own a home.
Completely. And if you have an electric vehicle, you plug it in, and you run on sunshine.
Well, that's the next question. Where are all these magic charging stations that you're talking about.
So, great point. This goes back to the Department of Transportation and the Department of Energy have a joint office, and the joint office is to help deploy the $7 billion that we received for charging stations across America. And so the goal is to get 500,000 charging stations across America so that if you live in a rural area, if you live in an area where there isn't a huge amount of electric vehicles, you can always find a charge. Now, if you're lucky enough to have a garage, you can always just plug in an electric vehicle and a grounded plug in your garage. So that's not an issue. But it's for people who don't have garages, for folks who live in apartments, et cetera, it's more difficult, right? So the first tranche of this money has now, all 50 states submitted plans to this joint office between DOE and the Department of Transportation. All 50 states' plans were approved, and D.C. and Puerto Rico. Everybody was approved. Thank you for that. The money has been sent to the states, and D.C. and Puerto Rico.
You got a local crowd here.
I get it. I got to read my crowd better. In the very short amount of time, the guidance for those entities, the states and D.C., et cetera, are going to be issued so that you should start to see more public charging out. So the first tranche of money was for corridors, transportation corridors, where people are likely to be going more greater distances so that you can, what the goal is that you will see a charging station on every freeway or highway. Every 50 miles, there will be a fast charger. And there'll have to be at least four plugs on that charger, and there probably will be multiple chargers together. So every 50 miles, can't be more than a mile off the freeway, kind of like a gas station, right? And it should be enabled to be connected via app. If you've got a smartphone, et cetera, you'll be able to see what chargers are available, where they are, et cetera, and plug into them. So that was the first chunk. The second chunk of money is going to go out for urban areas, which may be poorer and maybe not have as much access to electric vehicles, so that we don't have the chicken and egg issue. We want people to have access to charging so they can feel comfortable getting an electric vehicle. And the same thing with rural areas. So we have charging corridors first, then the urban and rural areas where we may not have as much second. So you're going to start to see these, starting, I think, in the next couple of months, pop up all over so that we have an infrastructure, charging infrastructure, to make people feel comfortable driving electric vehicles.
And you mentioned solar as well. I mean, we put on solar panels, but they were pretty expensive. I know that's kept a lot of people from making that investment, and it is an investment because eventually you get your money back. Are we producing our own solar panels now? And is the price coming down?
Yeah, okay, so number one, are we producing our own? We're not producing enough, but because of the incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act, now manufacturers are onshoring. Now, China really had a real lock on this area of producing solar panels. But since the Inflation Reduction Act, there's an American company called First Solar. It just announced a huge new factory, in fact, two of them. Georgia just announced the biggest solar factory in America from a South Korean company that is coming to Georgia to make solar panels. We're seeing more and more of that reshoring, which is very exciting, number one. Number two, the technology itself has improved so much. I don't know when you had your solar panels installed.
Ten years ago.
So the technology has brought down the price, and it continues to drive down the price. So the price of solar has dropped significantly over the past decade because of that research and development. And then third, because of the Inflation Reduction Act, people will get this 30% tax credit for putting solar panels on their roof off the top. And then if people are in a moderate or low income, if, for example, they're eligible for weatherization dollars, they can have them fully paid for, which is very exciting as well. So there's all kinds of incentives like that that will generate, I think, demand.
And let's pause there for a quick break here on the Bill Press Pod, and then we'll continue our conversation with Secretary Jennifer Granholm. When we come back, I want to ask her the question a lot of us have been asking ourselves and others. when are we finally going to get away from fossil fuels? Today's podcast with Jennifer Granholm, Secretary of Energy, brought to you by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, 1.3 million members strong, the UFCW under the leadership of Mark Perrone. They're the union members we probably see most often in our daily lives because they're there serving us in our great retail chains, our big grocery stores, working in our chemical plants and our food processing plants, as well as our cannabis plants. We salute the good members of the UFCW, thank them for their great work, and thank them especially for their support of the Bill Press Pod.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well, inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Back with today's podcast, Secretary of Energy Jennifer Granholm, our guest. In a recent in-person interview at the Hill Center on Capitol Hill, and what I wanted to know is what you want to know. Fossil fuels, when are we finally going to break with them once and for all, or are we?
Well, I do think people have to realize this is a transition, right? You know, not everybody's going to flip over to electric vehicles. And, you know, there will be a need for fossil fuels in as we proceed through till the point where everybody, all countries have said that they want to get to net zero by 2050. So the question is, what does that look like? And in the United States, the interim step would be 2035 when we want to have 100% clean electricity. Right. And so as we move people to electric vehicles, that will help. But, you know, even the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that, was born at in the Paris Accords, et cetera, where everybody's trying to get to this net zero by 2050. All the scientists, everybody's in agreement that it's not going to be an on-off switch. It is going to be a transition. And it has to be a managed transition because you don't want to see people all of a sudden have no power because we've switched so soon with haven't replaced it with the clean energy that we want. But I will say this, that the incentives that were passed will ensure that we'll get there a lot quicker than we certainly would have otherwise. We want to, it'll be around for a few more years, but even the oil and gas companies, as much as they're making so much money right now, but even that they are seeing, as we say in Michigan, where the puck is going, and they're skating to many of them, not all of them, but many of them are doing significant investments in, for example, offshore wind or in geothermal. I mean, geothermal, if you take an oil and gas worker who's working on a rig, what geothermal is drilling. right, down. And you have to have people who know the subsurface, as they say, and to be able to identify where the best spots are. And so the transition in many ways for some technologies is very easy for them. And so we're constantly encouraging that to happen. And I think even these incentives are causing a number of them to up their game.
Let me ask you about a bigger picture, and that is the war in Ukraine has certainly disrupted supply, particularly in Western Europe. Has it impacted our energy issue supply here in the United States? And what are we doing in terms of globally to offset that?
I mean, I think the war in Ukraine has created a bifurcated global energy track. I mean, you see us and our NATO allies banding together to be able to create more energy security. And people are now seeing the shift to renewable energy and clean energy as a form of national security. Putin weaponized energy, right? And so people don't want to be the victims of countries who don't share our values holding the cards for energy. And so everybody, I mean, in Europe, there has been this massive acceleration to renewables because that is homegrown energy. And people can feel like I have some, people in the countries can feel like I have some agency over what I can get from the wind and the sun. And so that has been an amazing unintended consequence, I'm sure, of what Putin's war has done. So now Russia and all of their supply of oil, of diesel, has been cut off of Europe. And so now they are finding other paths for that. So they sell to China, they sell to India, they sell to a few other countries. But it has really helped to choke the supply of money that Russia was making to be able to execute its war, which is good. But it also creates this awareness of how much the globe has to accelerate. I have my counterpart in Ireland, the energy minister there, his name is Eamon Ryan, and he has said that that this move to renewables is such a national security issue because no country can weaponize access to the sun. No country can ever weaponize access to wind. Mm. It is a national security issue. So that's number one. You know, number two, it has made the United States, an indispensable nation, which with respect to energy supplies, particularly for us, our liquefied natural gas has helped Europe in their time as they have lost so much supply. But you know, that's for a period of time. It's going to be interesting to see how quickly everybody continues to move. When Russian energy was pulled away from Europe, they switched to coal, they switched to LNG. But ultimately, what they want to do is switch to zero carbon technologies. And so there may be an interim period where there was an uptick in fossil fuels, but I think you're going to see this continued drive to decarbonize. And that's true in Europe. It's true. I mean, in the United States, we didn't take much Russian oil, very little. We banned it, but we didn't take much. But I can tell you, because of the supply that was pulled off the market because of Russia not being able to sell, there were millions of barrels per day. And of course, oil is traded on a global market. And when you pull away supply, that means that price goes up, which is what you saw last summer, right? When we got up to $5 a gallon, that was direct result of Russian oil being banned by countries like us and in Europe, and that supply being pulled off the market. So the president, in this interim period, said what we're going to do is we want to help that supply globally so we can bring down the price of gas. So we'll release 1 million barrels a day from our strategic petroleum reserve to try to balance out supply and demand while our oil and gas companies and the global oil and gas companies picked up the gap that was created by Russian oil being pulled off the market. So now that's why you're seeing prices moderate right now, and I think they'll probably stay around this level depending on what happens in China in terms of gas prices, which is what people really feel. But ultimately, what the war did was create this huge push to renewables. And I think that's a really healthy, a silver lining in a terrible circumstance. Yeah.
So nuclear labs, 17 of them.
Now, 17 labs, I would say three of them are NNSA labs, the National Nuclear Security Administration.
I was just kidding when I said earlier about the number one question was the gas stoves. But it is, I've been thinking a lot about it. But I'm not kidding when I say...
Do you have a gas stove?
We do have a gas stove.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's all right. We have a gas stove, too.
And you'd have a hard time getting it away from
my cold, dead hands.
But on the nuclear labs... I'm not kidding when I say that I spoke to a good friend, Governor Jerry Brown, told him we were going to be talking tonight, and asked him if he had any particular question that he might like me to ask you about the nuclear labs. So with the help of Jerry Brown, I ask you, are you confident that our nuclear labs are doing enough on clean energy and climate change?
Okay, so...
Are you pushing them enough in that direction,
right,
is what he's saying?
When you say the nuclear labs, I'm just to be... Those
Department
are the labs...
Department of Energy labs, I guess.
Right, so we have 17 labs at the Department of Energy, and there are three of them that are attached to the Department of Defense, the National Nuclear Security Administration, and those are the labs that really do the work on our nuclear stockpile, et cetera.
Okay. We'll get to them next.
Well, but I will say this, that, you know, the Lawrence Livermore National Lab is one of those NNSA labs, and they're the ones who, you know, who were able to achieve what is known as ignition, which means, for those of you who don't follow nuclear power so much, but fusion is, of course, bringing together, pushing together elements of an atomic nucleus, and that pushing them together creates energy. It's what happens in the sun. It's what happens in the stars. It's been really hard to do. People have tried for 60 years to replicate the process in the stars and have not been able to do it. And what the process, what you really want to do is to have more energy come out of this reaction than the energy it took to make the reaction, right? And that's called ignition, and that's fusion. And why do we like fusion? Because it leaves no waste. No nuclear waste. It is abundant energy, clean energy. And if we can crack the code on how to take that process and commercialize it and make a commercial fusion reactor, that is an unbelievable game changer. So that process happened in the NNSA lab. But all of our labs are working on energy. All of them are, regardless. I mean, they could be working on nuclear energy other than they can be working on fission, which is the process of splitting atoms, versus fusion, which is the process of pushing the atomic nuclei together. The bottom line is all of them, the Department
Climate
of Energy
change,
labs.
Clean energy, they're on it.
Yeah, and the cool stuff is, Bill, I just love these next generation technologies. Like, we have launched a series of Earth Shots, what we call, to which are next generation technologies to help save the planet. What are the big technologies? For example, you know, offshore wind, floating offshore wind platforms. You've seen some of these stationary offshore wind platforms going into the Atlantic. But in the Pacific, because there's a huge drop off of when you get out in the water, you can't have stationary, so you might have to have floating platforms. But it's expensive. So the shot is to reduce the cost by 90%. Of the offshore wind floating platform, so it becomes more economical. We have a shot on clean hydrogen, which is hydrogen that's made by splitting water. Hydrogen is a form of energy, or form of storage of energy, or form of movement of energy. You split water, the H from H2O, right, is hydrogen. And if you can split that off, and you can do it in a clean way, the energy created by renewable energy, it creates potentially a huge energy source. So we have a shot to reduce the cost of that to make it commercially viable. We have a whole series. We got 8 shots happening and more coming all the time, like in enhanced geothermal and, you know, all this very cool stuff. The labs are all working on that. So they've got their eye on the future and the present. We have at the department, our infrastructure has got our eye on the present. And some of our labs have our eye on the past, which is cleaning up from some of the work that was done during the Manhattan Project, et cetera. People are still concerned about nuclear waste. no doubt, right? It is nuclear waste. We have got to deal with it. And there's a lot of technology in the labs that are looking at, for example, reprocessing of that waste. France reprocesses its nuclear waste, and we could too. So we need to, I think, look at ways to be able to recycle and not have that waste. People are also concerned about safety, obviously, as well. But I can tell you that our regime, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, we have the gold standard of safety in this country. And, you know, you just don't see those incidents. And nuclear power represents about 20% of our power, and about 50% of our non-carbon emitting power. And so pulling that offline at a time when we want to reduce carbon emissions is a challenge as well. There's a lot of technology going into next generation nuclear, these small modular reactors, or reactors that don't produce as much waste, for example. So all of that research is also happening, which I think has made people think, well, maybe we should look at technology as a way of answering some of these tough questions with respect to nuclear.
I think you know now what I knew coming in here tonight, that we have the right person in the right place at the right time, don't you think?
Oh, that's so nice. That's so nice.
I've long lamented the fact that you were born in Canada, I'm sorry, and therefore could not run. But, well, first of all, how's Michigan looking these days? Looking a lot better, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, it's so great. Yes, we have a fantastic governor in Gretchen Whitmer. She is just a kick butt.
Yeah,
and in this past election, now, I'm making assumptions about the audience here, but let's just say that she got a legislature, both chambers, that agrees with her. And that's really great, because when I was elected, I had a legislature that both the House and the Senate and the Supreme Court and the Attorney General, everybody was in a different party than I was. And so this is nice to be able to govern with family.
We like trifectas.
Right? Yes, we do.
and so while you cannot run for president, we know that your great senator, Debbie Stabenow, is stepping down. So far as I know, there's nothing that would prevent your running for United States Senate from Michigan. You want to make a little news tonight?
Yeah. I have a great job. That's
you
my
do.
News. No, I'm not interested in that. I love my job. I love my boss. I'm happy where I am.
And you're doing a great job. Thank you, Madam Secretary.
Thank you. Thank you all.
And that's it for today's podcast with Secretary of Energy Jennifer Granholm, doing a great job for all of us at the DOE. Thank you so much for joining us today. Now we'll let you go, but invite you back for this week's roundtable. It's going to be a big roundtable, talking especially about President Biden's secret trip to Kyiv in Ukraine, meeting with President Zelensky, and he was accompanied by our own Sabrina Siddiqui, frequent guest on our roundtable here on the Bill Press Pod. So lots to talk about this Friday, that and all the rest of the news of the week in Washington. Have a great week, folks. We'll see you on Friday for the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.